tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. In the House of Commons, progress on Brexit certainly creeps at a petty pace from day to day. Now, nearly 3 years after the UK voted to leave the European Union, Theresa May has decided to speed things up by, well, slowing them down.
Centrism is dead, they say, with voters abandoning the liberal consensus that has governed Western democracies for the last 30 years. But in France, Emmanuel Macron is defying all that. The former socialist economy minister's new political movement, En Marche, didn't even exist a year ago.
What's going to happen with Brexit? If you work in Westminster, you find yourself being asked this question at least 10 times a day. And 10 times a day, you have to admit that you really have no idea. Of course, it's not just us journalists who are in the dark about how Britain is going to end up leaving the European Union, but also those at the top, including, it seems, the Prime Minister. Every week in Westminster is an uncertain one, and this one has been no exception.
This is what one of the longest-running radio programs in the world sounds like today. The Week in Westminster from BBC Radio has been running regularly since 1929. It's just one of the many programs produced by the Talks division of the BBC, one of the most innovative and historically significant arms of the organization through the 1920s and the rest of the 20th century and beyond. We are hearing three rather different approaches to parts of the program here, but they all have something else in common. They are samples of the 21st century version of a program first devised and broadcast under the guidance of a woman. Most people working in or studying radio and audio media in Canada, the United States, and even Britain have never heard of her. On International Women's Day, I'm talking about one of radio's early hero pioneers. I want to introduce you to Hilda Matheson. I'm Paul Cross. This is Cross Talk, media history, commentary, and analysis. Talks at the BBC were radio programs that were intended to be informative, but under the authoritarian rule of Director General John Reith, talks were not to be controversial. They had to be in good taste, and they were not to amount to covering news. The BBC was not to produce its own news, not in the 1920s. In 1926, Reith convinces the assistant to a member of Parliament, Nancy Astor, to leave that job and to join the BBC. Hilda Matheson becomes the very first director of Talks. She's a woman in one of the most influential roles at BBC Radio in 1926. And according to the BBC itself, this is the first and only time John Reith actually headhunted a specific woman to work at the BBC. Astor, by the way, was the very first woman ever elected to the British Parliament. In my decades of work in radio and my studies at different levels, I had never heard of Hilda Matheson. But I'm really glad I found out about her through Sarah Jane Stratford. I find her novel Radio Girls as I'm looking for a book to read on a flight from Toronto to London, summertime 2016.
I was doing some research on women in the early days of journalism, and I came across this, you know, it was just really like one sentence. You know, Hilda Matheson was the first director of Talks at BBC. And I thought, well, who is this? I've never heard of her. And then I started reading up on her, and I just could not believe that she was not more famous and that nobody had written about her in any substantive way.
Stratford's central character, a young woman from Toronto, moves to London via New York and ends up working for Matheson at BBC. And through Stratford's novel, we learn some remarkable things about Hilda Matheson. We talked about this in 2016. The interview has been used by students in some of my courses through a closed site for courses, but Sarah Jane has given me permission to use her voice in this podcast.
She saw radio as, you know, as an educational tool, particularly so with some of the programming she developed, you know, specifically for women as they were becoming full-fledged citizens insofar as, you know, the Equal Franchise Act. So it was important to me to use two of the programs that she created, Questions for Women Voters, which was, you know, really just an educational program to, you know, teach women like how to be civic members of society. And then also the Week in Westminster, which is a very different program, but is still running today, which rather pleases me.
So the Week in Westminster, now 90 years old, was created by Hilda Matheson originally as a program for women who had full and equal voting rights for the first time in the election of 1929. No longer were there restrictions that had come with the start of limited voting rights for women in 1918. Questions for Women Voters was intended to empower women leading up to the 1929 vote. While she was initially prevented from reporting news, Matheson devised programs in which highly placed hosts and guests discussed and analyzed events that were news. She brought literature and educational talks to radio. And it's Matheson who was able to convince some of the big names and bright minds of her time to agree to be heard over this new invisible medium, radio. H.G. Wells, George Bernard Shaw, author Rebecca West, economist John Maynard Keynes, all agreed to her request and would give 15-minute scripted talks on BBC Radio. Author and poet Vita Sackville-West became a regular.
When I first told my friends that I was going to Persia, I discovered that to most of them, Persia was little more than a vague romantic name. They had very little idea of where it exactly was, and still less of how to get there.
Vita Sackville-West's voice, heard here, is taken from a compilation released by BBC Radio on CD for its 75th anniversary in 1997. I have not found any sound of the voice of Hilda Matheson. In 1928, the restrictions against news development by the BBC were lifted, and Matheson developed policies and approaches for news broadcasting. She arranged the first political party leaders' debate on radio. She wondered, in her words, "Will broadcasting tend to become more and more the vehicle for actual news in which its universality and the speed with which it can be diffused gives it an inherent advantage over print?" This is from Matheson's brilliant book published in 1933. It is called Broadcasting. If it's not already clear that Hilda Matheson was both expert at the new art of radio in the 1920s, it should be very clear from her book that she could clearly see the future. The questions she asks can be applied to the dilemmas legacy media face these decades later. In addition to mapping policies and approaches for reporting news on radio, Matheson also understood what so many people migrating from other endeavors did not and do not. Performance on radio is performance, and the way it needs to be done is unique to radio. She had to train and tutor actors, authors, politicians, and intellectuals of her day. Speaking on the radio demands something quite different from bellowing to a crowd in an auditorium. She's thinking about what we call microphone technique for broadcasters, and she understands the power of the human voice. Listen to this from Broadcasting, page 59. "The most pervasive and most powerful effects of broadcasting are seen not in music, but in speech. This is true socially, psychologically, educationally, politically, but the fact took some time to emerge. Music, humor, entertainment generally would reach, it was felt, so many more people than any other type of program that it was in those directions that the chief importance of broadcasting lay. It has only slowly dawned upon us that the new emphasis and importance given to spoken as distinct from written language is likely to have results that we never dreamed of. The power of human voice. The power of radio." Hilda Matheson left the BBC in 1931 in a disagreement with Director General John Reith. His Reithian values prevented her from broadcasting a literary talk about the novel Lady Chatterley's Lover. She wrote a regular column on radio for some time for the London Observer newspaper. She was still thinking about radio's role in education and society when she wrote in her column in 1934, "And because it reaches people at all times and seasons, it can help to dispose of the myth that to use or to train the mind is something imposed on youth at school to be put on and off like clothes, which has nothing to do with life." A clipping of her column with those words is found, what a surprise, inside my copy of that beautiful small book, Broadcasting, which was hunted down and obtained for me so generously by a former student. You may be able to find the book through a major library. They have one copy at the Reference Library in downtown Toronto. It's a treasure. In the 1920s, John Reith wanted women working at the BBC to have an equal footing with men, according to the BBC itself. The field was new. War had ended just a few years earlier. The radio workplace seemed one of art and culture and technology. This is the world Hilda Matheson is recruited to join, leaving her job as assistant to Member of Parliament Nancy Astor, which she took up after serving as essentially a spy during the war with MI5. Matheson served MI5 again early in the Second War, setting up a broadcasting branch to counter Nazi propaganda. She's recognized as a member of the Order of the British Empire. She died during surgery in 1940 at the age of 52. I'm going longer than usual in this episode, and I'm barely scratching the surface. If you have the chance, I recommend reading Broadcasting by Hilda Matheson. Search it out. The novel, Radio Girls, by Sarah Jane Stratford, is published by the New American Library and easily found. My review of the novel is on WordPress at Paul Cross Radio 1. This International Women's Day, I'm thinking about the remarkable contributions made to radio by Hilda Matheson. This is Cross Talk. I'm Paul Cross. I study and I teach radio.